Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 16, 2019. South Sudan's opposition leader dies in Khartoum.
After the massacre in Juba, Peter was commanding in board, and he and all his troops decided to rebel and join the forces of rebellion. That was voluntary.
And activists are training community leaders to prevent violence occurring in South Sudan.
The society is split. Things have fallen apart. There is a problem between the agriculturalists and those who are the pastoralists.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we'll first go to Khartoum. A senior former Sudanese diplomat says the future of his country looks brighter after former President Omar al-Bashir was toppled by the military last week. Ambassador Nur al-Din Sati says a new civilian government will be formed in Sudan to fulfill the demands of the protesters.
People are returning back home because there is a new dispositions, new political and social dispositions. There have been a revolution in Sudan, where the former regime of President Omar al-Bashir was toppled a few days ago, and a new, a military council has taken over, and now the opposition groups are getting their heads together in order to form a cabinet, a civilian cabinet that would take things in hand.
And as a seasonal diplomat, what is your reading? Most of the people who are not in Sudan don't understand what is happening in Khartoum. What is your reading?
My reading is that there is change, overwhelming and sweeping change, which is happening here. We have been having, for the last 4 months, unprecedented popular mobilization against the former regime. Adopting the slogans of freedom and peace. And this has resulted in ousting the former president and have opened the way for new dispositions in which people are aspiring to freedom, change, and justice.
And looking at Sudan under former President Omar Hassan al-Bashir, its relations with the West has been very rocky, if you like, very rough. What are some of the foreign policy priorities for any new government in Sudan?
The foreign policy priorities is that to have a new, to normalize Sudan's relations with the outside world and to completely change the image of Sudan that has been tarnished for the last 30 years with a regime that has been supporting, harboring and supporting terrorism and all kinds of violence, has been interfering in other countries' affairs, including some of the neighboring countries, and that has been, ostracized by the international community as a criminal regime, which has initiated wars in many parts of Sudan and has succeeded, quote-unquote, dividing the country into two parts. So now we are aspiring that to have normal relations with the region, to have normal relations with our international partners, and see to it that we bring back to the international fold in a more positive and constructive way.
And what about the message from the African Union? It looks like it's a slap on the military government in Khartoum because they are saying the government has to form a civilian government or else they will not be part of the African Union.
Yeah, well, of course, as you know, this is African Union policy and we are in full support with this position because we also in the civil society, we think that We are have always been against military coups, but this is, of course, not a conventional military coup. It is a coup that has been, or a change that has been stimulated by and supported by popular demonstrations, popular protests. And it is a different kind of coup. And we'd like, actually, to give it another face by telling our military brothers and partners that we should work together in order to see to it that this message is not conveyed to international regional community as being a military coup, a conventional military coup, but a change that has been operated by all Sudanese, and that we should give a civilian face to this change so that the international community and the regional community will not again impose sanctions of any kind on Sudan.
You were telling me about a possibility of the formation of a civilian government in Sudan. Are there any surprises, new faces?
Well, not quite yet. We are still waiting for that government to be formed. I know that the various partners have been meeting and holding intensive meetings, and I think within the next 2 or 3 days, there are going to be some announcements in that to that effect.
That's Ambassador Nureddin Sati, a former senior diplomat at Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He was speaking with me from Khartoum this past hour. Church leaders and some civil society activists in South Sudan are training community leaders to become peace ambassadors in their communities. Organizers of the training say the leaders will be trained on conflict prevention, peace and trust building and reconciliation. Michael Atid has this story for VOA from the town of Wau.
Bishop Moses Dengbol of the Episcopal Church says the 4-day training will help communities to speak their minds and speak about the root causes of the conflict and find ways of how to coexist peacefully.
When the truth is said, it is very likely people will forgive one another. When they know they have been hurt and they have been understood, and then that one will be followed by forgiveness. There will be new understanding, there will be relationship, there will be trust building.
Bishop Deng says he believes some conflicts are fueled by politicians who use ethnicity to stir them up. He says some conflicts have roots dating back in 1983.
Some of it is long-term. It goes back to the history of the liberation struggle and the fact that Khartoum government by that time was using Southern Sudanese against one another. And that is still, that bitterness, historical issues are also still there.
Gabriel Gok, a Luo community leader, says the social fabric of the society in South Sudan is broken. Gok says the ongoing conflict between farmers and cattle keepers is likely to affect his community.
There is a serious effect on the general fabric. The society has been split. Things have fallen apart. There is a problem between the agriculturalists and those of pastoralists.
Coletta Aku is a women's leader in Wau. She says many women are victims of conflict and there is a need to protect women and children.
When this conflict arises, it makes women now even to be afraid of your own daughter who is being married to the other side. A woman has got a heart, love and faith, and a woman has got a harmony in the heart which welcomes anybody. But when crisis comes, you find somebody who is not of your culture and have done something bad to your people or to your child, you will be traumatized.
Staff with the non-profit Community Empowerment for Progress organization, or SEPO in Wau, say the community leaders will help the government detect early signs of conflicts to prevent deadly fighting. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
The leader of a faction of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance died in Khartoum on Monday after a short illness. General Peter Gadet Yak was the chairman of the South Sudan United Movement, who signed the revitalized peace agreement on behalf of a faction of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance in September last year. Veteran South Sudanese politician Peter Aduok Nyaba says Gadet was a patriotic South Sudanese who fought in the struggle for independence.
John, I would like really to pass my condolence to the family of General Peter Gadet and the entire people of Western Upper Nile, Ventiu area, for the great loss. You know, I came to know him in 1995. Then we were all in the opposition against the SPLA-SPLM. But Peter, of course, was William Nguyen, and William Nguyen had been pushed to run to Juba, and so they kind of made some alliance with the Sudan Armed Forces, and they were stationed in Magri. But I think Peter did not want this. And in March 2005, he led a very courageous move, a very patriotic move, a revolutionary move, in which he captured some 176 South troops in Magri and demanded that William should come back to rejoin the SPLA, or otherwise he would execute these people. So William Nguyen had to come out from Juba to join him. And, of course, they released the prisoners, and they rejoined the SPLM, which resulted in the famous Chukudum Declaration, which Dr. Riak rejected, because the idea was now to reunite the SPLM-SPLA after more than 4 years of intensive fighting.
Yes.
So, some of us who were with Riak at that time now decided now to abandon him and join the SPLA. This is where the SPLM-SPLA got reunited and regained the strength which it managed later to repulse the big offensive which the NCP SAP tried to recapture Nimuli. So this is some of the highlights of Comrade Peter. Let him rest in peace. And other areas, of course, people will talk that he killed...
He has good records and bad records, and he was sanctioned by the United Nations for his role in the 2013 fighting in South Sudan.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, that's the typical of every human being, you know. We have both good sides and bad sides and so on. But, you know, as a soldier, he would always respond to orders. And what happened in 1999, which Karbino was killed, was, I think, orders of the SPLM, because William was now deciding to go back to rejoin the government of Sudan and fight the SPLM again, after he ran out of war in 1998. So these are some of the things. Then, of course, in 2013, after the massacre in Juba, Peter was commanding in Bor, and he and all his troops decided to rebel and join the forces of rebellion. That was voluntary, responding to the sad thing that happened in Juba. I don't think he was ordered by Riak to rebel and so on. In fact, Riak had to end himself to him. So these are some of the few things. Then again, we met, of course, in the SPLM-IO, in which he was commanding in Ventiu. And Dr. Riak decided to transfer them to and make them idle in Pagak. And, of course, as a seasoned general, he would not come and sit idly. So problems started to mount that time, and which led to him to leave the SPLM-IO and to create his own, now he has his own political outfit.
You know, within your time in the SPLA, have you heard of his success in Battle France?
After they fought in Ventiu, and which led to the capture of Ventiu in April 2014, and in which, of course, a lot of massacres occurred there. Other generals who did not want the way things were being done in the IO So they left. They decided to leave. You recall people like late Gabriel Tanguinha also, or now General Godot. You see, you were now opposed to the way Riek was running the movement.
That's Peter Adwok Nyaba, a veteran South Sudanese politician, talking about the legacy of late General Peter Gadet. He was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at malnutrition in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who makes you happy?
My family makes me happy, but mostly my aunt. She's called Aunt Prosy. She makes me happy very much. She motivates me.
I personally, someone who understands me better. Like, you know what I do. When I get happy, you know, and you can easily identify that I'm not happy with something. Yes, that is all that makes me happy.
Basically, me in my life, I love being with my family. I love being with people that I love, people that also love me. So when I'm around such kind of people, I feel very happy.
I'm happy when I'm spending time with my sisters. We are able to do fun stuff, like we cook together and we just spend a lot of time together, and I'm happy when I'm with them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we are looking at malnutrition. The spokesperson for the International Rescue Committee and Hollywood actress Mia Farrow returned last week from South Sudan's Unity State, where she visited health clinics run by IRC. Farrow says hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese children could face malnutrition this year. She urged humanitarian organizations to improve the way they handle malnutrition.
The entire country, South Sudan, is on the brink of famine. It's a truly potentially catastrophic humanitarian situation, and people are literally starving.
Now, when you say famine, you know, that's a trigger word for some organizations or international.
That's why I said on the brink of, because it could be declared at any point.
Right. And then also you have mentioned that up to 860,000 children, I believe, are expected to suffer from acute malnutrition this year. That also is kind of like a category. Can you describe what that means when you say acute malnutrition?
Well, it's the very highest level of malnutrition, because there are lesser levels, moderate, and acute, as we all know what the word means. It's a child who is starving to death unless there's some sort of intervention. On the broader level, there's over 6 million people. We're talking about 860,000 children under 5. But, you know, there's more than 6 million people who are food insecure. Again, that's sort of a humanitarian aid worker's word, food insecure. But it's not hard to imagine what that means. They don't have enough food or access to food, regular access to food.
Right. You were there, and you were on the ground, and I imagine you met some of these people. Give me an idea of the impression of these people. Like, how did they affect you? What did they tell you? How is their existence?
Well, their existence is as difficult as you might imagine, given the wars and now the hunger. But the really encouraging thing was meeting these women who are volunteers and who are working within their communities to address some of the very common illnesses that children face. that would be diarrhea, malnutrition, and pneumonia. This they do effectively. And I saw them as heroes, you know, because they are absolutely committed to their communities. The children can be brought to them. They're right nearby. And they very ably, effectively, and swiftly address these common problems. And they were also wanted to go to the homes. They spoke of wishing for a raincoat or rain boots because, as you know, the rainy season comes in May. And that means the sand turns to mud and it's harder to get around. But they're eager to address the problems that afflict their community. And one of those problems, one of the most severe, would be the malnutrition. And that they aren't allowed to treat. Because for some, I don't know, for decades now, over 20 years, some UN agencies, specifically the World Food Program and UNICEF, have taken over that task. And that means that they treat these children in clinics. Well, that sounds great, but when you realize the distance people live, I mean, there is virtually no infrastructure in South Sudan, no roads, no cars, people are just there. So on my last trip before this, I actually had an experience that was a lasting one. A woman, a mother carrying a baby, was sitting in the corner holding a particularly beautiful baby who was panting, and she told us she had walked for 5 days to reach that clinic. And as I spoke to her, the baby died, and the mother just, there was a howl that I will remain with me till my last breath. And so when I heard that the IRC had come up with a novel, effective, cost-effective, but life-saving new method of dealing with acute malnutrition at all levels, actually, I got so excited by this notion. It hasn't been implemented yet widely, but that has to happen.
That's humanitarian activist and IRC spokesperson Mia Farrow. The actress was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Damme last week from New York. A senior official at South Sudan's health ministry says access to health services has remained low since the country gained independence in 2011. The ministry's undersecretary says 66% of South Sudanese accessing health services are government officials, adding that the ordinary citizens are left to struggle on their own. Onen Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Juba.
Dr. Makur Koryom says South Sudan's health indicators do not look good despite donor support.
The health indicators, even though there is slight improvement over the years, 10 years down the line, we still remain at the bottom of the list among the countries of the world. In our case, only 44% of us are accessing some sort of health care. But who are those 44? It is me, it's you, Your Excellency, it's the Deputy Minister, it's all these gentlemen sitting in the front seats who have accessibility to state resources. Some of us have insurances in their other countries so that they go back and seek care in those countries, and the majority is left behind.
39-year-old Munir Gaga is a retired police sergeant major who was injured in both thighs when a colleague shot him by mistake yesterday. Gaga was admitted for surgery at Juba Teaching Hospital, the only government referral facility in Juba, and says there are no drugs there.
If the drugs prescribed are not there in the hospital, we bought them outside so the doctor could continue treating me. The economic situation in the country has turned everything into business. Sometimes the government does not have drugs, so to get treatment, people go and buy from outside.
Jacqueline Ludia Stephen has run into the same problem while her husband is being treated at the Al Cardinal Kidney Dialysis and Treatment Center. He had been getting treatment in Khartoum, but after they heard about a kidney center in Juba, she decided to bring her husband there. She says the facility does not provide medicine for patients.
The doctors are there, they are trying, but other things are not there. Even sometimes we used to buy the gloves from the pharmacies. Every medicine you need to buy, like the Ibrin, Epotherapin, the one which you use to increase the blood, we used to buy them. Even this in normal saline, we used to buy them. Even the plasters. Sometimes they tell that the center does not have a budget.
Lydia says her husband's ailment has drained family resources.
Now I'm not even working. The husband is not working. Who will take care of the children? Some assets we've been selling them out so that we can at least push the life. Because we used to think that maybe one day, God will even provide other things. And we are even hoping that, we are praying hard that at least maybe God will hear our prayer that we can get some donors to assist the center. At least so that the patient will be fine, so that it will relieve us.
Their tales are commonplace around the country and reflect a recurring problem. Treatment for serious medical issues is limited to those without money. Health officials at the center declined to comment because they are not authorized to speak to the media. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
And that report by Onan Solomon in Juba brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song, The Heroes of Our Nation by Victoria Ole. We've been listening to Victoria Ole with the song, The Heroes of Our Nation. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We celebrate.